Welcome to the Less Doing Podcast, where you will learn how to start living more by doing less.
Let me help you optimize, automate, and outsource your entire life so you can focus on doing the things you love.
Now here's your host, Ari Mizell.
So this, you may have a book title that is like, I think it might be my favorite book title ever. Right, so I'm talking to Paul Jarvis, and the book is called How Staying Small is the Next Big Thing, right? Or is that, did I get it?
How Staying Small is the Next Big Thing in Business.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah. I love it so much. And I'm so excited to talk to you. So thank you, Mr. Paul Jarvis, for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, no problem. I'm excited.
So, one of the reasons why I love this is just because I'm really obsessive with sort of running lean and mean and really putting systems and processes in place before you add people to any kind of a situation. And also, when I restarted my company about a year ago, I said that we were going to be small by design, because I had just come from a company with almost 200 people working for it that was scaling very quickly. And not that there's anything wrong inherently with that, but it just wasn't, I didn't like it. And to me, I was like, this new company, we're going to be much smaller, and we are a team of four. I have three people with me, and we are scaling through means that have nothing to do with people. So I love it. So let's talk about your background a little bit. Who are you? Who's Paul?
Sure. I like that. I should have talked to you while I was writing the book, because that sounds like you would be a really good case study. So I'll have to write a sequel and include you then.
Thank you.
So yeah. So who am I? I wish I knew. I mean, I've been working for myself for 20 years now, which feels like a long time in internet years. So I started as a web designer. I was working for everyone from pro athletes to Fortune 100 companies, and then later on digital entrepreneurs when that kind of got started. And then I transitioned lately into, I guess, creating content and products. So I do a lot of writing, like the book and articles. I also have a bunch of products like a simple analytics platform, some WordPress plugins, and a new writing tool. And then I host a bunch of podcasts, but I think it all kind of ties together in the idea that I kind of share with you, that you can have growth in business without necessarily growing by traditional means. And I don't think that growth as a metric of success is always inherently valid. I think the point of the book and the point of kind of everything in my business life has been that growth should be questioned, because sometimes it's great. Sometimes you need growth. Sometimes it's not great. And sometimes growth or rapid growth or unchecked growth or unmanaged growth can lead to a business's downfall or demise or destruction.
So how many companies have you worked for?
One. I started, because I've worked for myself for forever. Like I worked for an ad agency in Toronto in the mid-90s. And then I quit, and then I haven't really looked back.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. No, yeah, it's funny, because I've actually worked for like a dozen different companies, everything from like small companies to Estee Lauder. I've actually worked for Freddie Mac, mortgage, you know, government organization for a summer. And I don't know, it took me 12 times to realize that I'm just a terrible employee. But it's just interesting how people tend to throw people at problems.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's easier to solve every problem with more. I think the easiest solution is typically more. So people like easy. Easy is good in business sometimes, but I think it's more interesting, more challenging, more creative, and makes for more durable businesses if we don't just solve everything with more, if we put a little bit of ingenuity or creativity behind the solution.
So do you have a bunch of freelancers or contractors that work with you?
Oh yeah, like so the book title, so the subtitle is Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing in Business. The actual book name is Company of One, but I'm not personally a company of one, and the book title isn't meant to be literal, because I think it'd be ridiculously hard to be able to be good at all of the things required to run a business. But kind of my strategy and the strategy of a lot of people now is I just kind of hire when I need to. Like I have a trusted small team, probably I probably work with about 6 people right now. They're all freelancers. None of them require management. They all cost more, but are the best at their job. So if I'm going to hire a copy editor, I want to hire the best copy editor because I don't want to have to manage a copy editor. I just want them to do their job and do their job well. So yeah, I have a team of people, but they're freelance. So I pay them when I need to. There's no HR and they just know how to do their job. And I don't have to tell them what to do.
And so what do you end up doing on a regular, like on a daily basis? What's your sort of routine?
So there is no typical. It's fun. Like, and I kind of like it that way. Like, it's funny because I really lean hard on like being a minimalist and having a minimal, simple business. But I also don't like, I wouldn't want to have to do the same thing every day. So some days I spend all day writing. Some days I spend all day talking on the phone with people or doing interviews or calls. I do tend to block off because I'm very introverted and I like to work alone by myself. I tend to block off Mondays and Fridays as just like quiet, focused, deep work time. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is when I do like all my asynchronous communication with the people that I work with or do calls or do things that require other people. So that's about the only routine that I have. But otherwise, it could be anything day to day.
So do you ever find yourself in, and again, I have a team of 3, but they're all remote. I work by myself for the most part. Do you ever find that you're in like a feedback vacuum in that way?
How do you mean?
Like you're not like by being on your own, essentially, even though you do have these contractor stuff, but you don't have a partner and you're not in an office per se, like that you don't necessarily get the feedback loop of information that you might get from interacting with other people more often.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm consciously aware of that and I never want to make decisions that are just based on my own hubris.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that that's always the best idea, but I know it is not. So yeah, like I just have friends that are like business friends, I guess. And I wish there was like another word. I wish there was another word for that.
Gross.
Yeah. So like I have a group of people that I can just bounce my ideas off of and they'll tell me like, hey, dude, that idea is garbage. Or, hey, that's a great idea. So, and I try to keep it mixed up as well. Like, I wouldn't want to go to the same people all the time. But I also don't want to go to people who are so ridiculously similar to me. I think homogeny in personal networks tends to not be as useful or effective. Whereas I would rather talk to people who don't do the exact same thing as me, who have kind of the same, like, business upbringing as me, who kind of see the world the same way as me. They're going to think the same as me, more or less. So I'd rather go to people who feel like they should be outside my network, but aren't actually outside my network because I know them and I feel like I get better insight from them.
So then when you're working with various companies and with the research and the writing of the book now, do you see particular kinds of companies that should stay small?
Yeah, I think the issue with growth and scale is kind of that there seems to be like a good organic size for most businesses. And I mean, Ricardo Semler, who is a gajillionaire and has started, I don't know, and managed so many companies, is like this Brazilian maverick dude. And he's kind of found the same thing where there seems to be like a good organic size for a business. And what I mean by that is, say a company like Airbnb, they wouldn't do well with one property on their site. They wouldn't be able to have a business model with even like 10 properties on their site. They need a lot of properties and a lot of customers, but not every company kind of works like that, where they need that massive marketplace. Like for myself, I do software and online courses primarily, and I've set them up in a way that I can automate as much as possible, put as many systems and processes in place. So I don't need people. Like if I hired people, I don't know what work I would give them, because I'd rather make my business very simple and set up systems and things in place to offset having to need people. And that way I can just kind of focus on the work that matters. Like if somebody has a very specific question about the software or the course that aren't answered in like a knowledge base or in onboarding videos. So I think that every business kind of has a size. And I think it's interesting because, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this because I wrote a book on it. So we all kind of start from not having enough. We all kind of start from zero in business. And so we all need growth to make our business successful, profitable, durable. But where I think a lot of people don't take time to internalize or think about is we can reach enough in our business. We can reach a big enough size or reach enough in terms of revenue or enough in terms of customers, where more doesn't necessarily benefit us in any huge or real or valuable way. But we all start from needing more. So we all start with this mindset of, oh, I need to grow to be successful. And we do in the beginning. But we don't, not many people stop and question, like, have I actually reached enough? And if I have reached enough, how could things change? Because things could definitely change if we hit that point. And I think for me, especially in my business, because I've been doing it for so long, I feel like I have reached enough in some areas. And then it's my job now to not necessarily focus 100% on growth, but focus on optimizing for where I'm at and doing better with what I have. I mean, growth does happen because there's churn, so it needs to be offset. But for the most part, I feel like there's like the pre-enough and the post-enough phase in business or in life even. And I think it's up to us to kind of figure out if we've hit that or not and what should change if we do.
Yeah, I think it's a very... you put it in a very eloquent way. So it's refreshing, honestly, to hear that. So what are some of the tools that tech tools that you're able to use that help make this more manageable for you?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of, because I have a like software background, I kind of approach everything like it's a software problem. So even information products like books or courses, I treat as like iterative versions. So I know the first version is going to suck, but I know that I'm going to iterate upon that. I know that it's going to be better as I get feedback, because in the beginning, like with an initial launch or an initial idea or an initial version of something, we're guessing at almost everything because we have the idea, but we haven't tested it in the market yet. So I need to get things out to market as fast as possible and then test it. So some of the tools that I use are email marketing primarily. Like I'm a huge email marketing nerd. So I spend a lot of time working on that because I know that it takes, so from the marketing perspective, it takes the same amount of time for me to write an article, send it to one person over email, as it does for me to write an article and send it to 30,000 people over email. And it shows up in the same place on their end either way, whether I'm just sending an email to them personally or they signed up for their for my mailing list, they're still going to get it in their inbox. I do a lot with onboarding because I found in both software and in courses specifically, a lot of the questions or the support or the actual like required contact is right at the beginning. So I feel like it's my job to educate people as best as possible right when they start. And pretty much I want to pre-answer questions that I'm pretty sure they're going to have based on what I've seen in the past. So I don't have to spend all of my time answering the same questions. I can pre-answer the questions that they may have, show them how to get the most out of what they've just purchased. And then whether it's like videos or knowledge-based or writing articles, like all those sorts of things, maybe it's sending an email like 15 minutes after they've bought something, where they've had a chance to look around and now they're like, oh no, I don't know what to do. And so there'll be an email that shows up saying like, hey, if you're stuck or if you need help with this, here are some of the things that you can watch. Here are some of the things that you can do. And if these things don't help, then hit reply and I'll help you kind of thing. So email marketing is probably one of the biggest tools. I know that email marketing generates the bulk of my revenue. So I do a lot with automation and segmented automation to make sure that people are getting basically the right email to the right person at the right time.
Yeah. And that's also, it's funny because I was just having a conversation with a client of mine who was talking about, he was going to hire somebody to do a whole website SEO conversion thing. And I was like, you're missing the with your email. Like you don't have to spend a dime and you can try this out today and see if it works. And as crazy as it sounds, I think people really miss the mark on email marketing.
People keep saying, oh, email's dead. And I'm like, no, I'm raising my hand in the back. Like, no, it's not. I think it just needs to be used well. Like, I think if you're just basically churn and burning your list, like just trying to pitch as much as possible till somebody either relents and buys or opts out, email marketing isn't going to work. But it's not the tool that's the problem. It's how you're using the tool that's the problem.
It's like in the Big Lebowski. You're not wrong, Walter. You're just an asshole.
Exactly. Like for myself, I've had a mailing list for that I've sent an email every single week for 6 years, and it's articles. It is sometimes pitches, but for the most part, it's articles. Like I share things that I know my audience are going to be interested in. I know they're going to be interested in because I talk to them, and I send emails every week. So they reply to them and I see kind of what people are working on, what they're struggling with. And my email marketing is ridiculously effective because I put in the time to make it ridiculously effective.
Yeah. I asked you already about the tools, but I mean, are you like for project management stuff, are you using things like Trello or are you using Slack, like any of those kind of things?
I don't use any specific project management tools. I try to keep the projects as simple as possible so I don't need to manage them in other software. Communication with my team, though, I tried Slack. Slack is really annoying to me. Like, I'm the type of person that has zero notifications on any of my devices unless it's a calendar event or a phone call. Otherwise, I don't get any beeps, bings, buzzes, visual cues. So I felt like Slack was just constantly interrupting me, and then I grew to hate it. So now I've been using Twist from the Doist folks for team communication, and that seems to be a good fit because I just go and look at it when I need to, or if we're kind of like working through a problem or I'm brainstorming with a partner, then we can be there and be asynchronous. But otherwise, I forget it's there unless I get like the email once a day saying, oh, these are the things that you missed. And that to me works really well. Whereas Slack was just constantly trying to interrupt my workflow.
So what are, in terms of like business development, you know, how other than the email, well, I mean, you said both of it comes from email marketing, but what are you offering for people for the most part? When people are doing email marketing, what can they sign up for?
Yeah, so it depends on the product, but the bulk of my communication with the bulk of my audience is my Sunday dispatches, which is obviously the weekly email. So people can sign up for articles once a week. There's no freebies, no gimmicks, no, I don't even have any pop-ups on my site. Like it's very, very minimal in terms of that. But I find that that works with my audience. And I mean, I've tested things. Like I've tested having a modal window and that increased my signups, but it didn't increase revenue, and those people that signed up through the pop-up were more likely to unsubscribe within a few weeks anyways. So the net end of that didn't really work out for me, but I've done things like A-B testing headlines and that, and now I just kind of stick with what's working. I mean, I should probably be testing a bit more, but I've kind of found a good place where my audience is big enough at the moment, to be honest, that they support the work that I do. So I don't necessarily need like thousands more subscribers a month. And it's at a certain place, talking about enough again, it's at a certain place where I can send out an email and I can personally reply to people that ask questions or have comments. And if it was bigger than that, I wouldn't be able to do that. Or I wouldn't be able to do that without losing my sanity. So I feel like I found the right size for my audience right now. And I mean, it does grow, but I'm not focused on growth. I'm focused on retention over acquisition. And it just looks different because then I can focus more on the people who are already paying attention and the information that I provide to them being valuable than looking at, well, how can I increase this? But in the beginning, it was. I needed to grow that list.
So what are your top three pieces of advice for people to be more effective?
That's a good question. I think if we're looking at being more effective, I think we need to think about how we can make a difference for people. And I think a lot of times we kind of get, because it's fun, ego is such a funny thing. Like we need ego to start something new or to work for ourselves because we think we can do something better than where we're currently at or what's out there on the market. So ego in that case is really good, but ego in other cases, like when we think, oh, we need to be big to make a difference, I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think that we can make a difference with a smaller audience, and we'd even be more profitable with a smaller audience. So I think kind of framing how we want to make a difference is a big thing, because I think once we start to think about what enough is and if we've reached it, we can say like, okay, I'm making enough of a difference now, and then I can optimize for it. I think some of the other things that we can do is think about how growth or scale will affect our profit, because making more gross doesn't necessarily mean, and everybody in the startup world especially is obsessed with like gross numbers, and MRR is gross numbers. Whereas it could end up costing more money to make more money. So the net or the profit or the margins is actually smaller. So I think we can find a good place where we're making as much money from the money we're making. So maybe it's decreasing expenses. Maybe it's trying to run things as lean as possible with like automated onboarding sequences or creating knowledge bases or videos instead of spending money on support. I think the other thing, the third thing that we might need to think of is what are the maintenance cost of opportunities? Because I think a lot of times opportunities are always seen as great, and we should feel good that we have opportunities in the first place, which is definitely true. But I also think we need to think about what the back end or long term costs of every opportunity is. Because it doesn't always make sense to say yes to everything or to build a certain feature or to offer a certain thing, because it could end up costing more or taking more time or even affecting our own happiness if we say yes to things that don't necessarily align with our values or with the direction we want our business to go. I think that's a wordy answer, but I think I covered.
Oh, that was fantastic. So. So Paul, so where can people find out more about you, get on your awesome newsletter, and also get the book?
Yeah, so my newsletter is called The Sunday Dispatches. It's at my website, which is PJRVS. If you just Google Paul Jarvis, my name, it's going to be the first page of links. The book is called Company of One, Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing in Business, and that's available pretty much everywhere online and at every bookstore as of January 15th. And the website for that is ofone.co.
Awesome. Paul, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to the Less Doing podcast. At Less Doing, we help entrepreneurs who have opportunity in excess of what their infrastructure can support to set up systems and processes that empower a team to ultimately make themselves more replaceable. That way, they can optimize, automate, and outsource everything in their businesses in order to be more effective. If you want to find out more about Less Doing, the podcast, the blog, the books, and all of the wonderful programs we offer to help you get from where you are to where you know you want to be, go to lessdoing.com/podcast and check out our OAO blueprint so you can get started today.